Today on The Grave Talks, ghosts of sleep paralysis. What are the ghosts of sleep paralysis? Every night, thousands of people around the world are plagued by an event known as sleep paralysis. Some write it off as the experience of a simple trick of the mind. The brain falling into a state of consciousness and sleep, throwing them into a paranormal-like state, seeing things that are not really there. Others understand something quite different. Some can even prove that something very real is taking place, providing physical evidence of something much darker at play. And they're sucked into this very real situation beyond their control. Today on The Grave Talks, we discuss the ghosts of sleep paralysis with Tyler Young, as he recounts the countless experience and evidence he's found while suffering from this controversial phenomenon.
You know, it really, one of the first paranormal experiences I ever had was actually in my grandma's house. We lived in Northeast Portland, and my grandpa owned about 2.5-3 acres, and they split it in half and gave it to my dad. Well, my grandpa hand-built his house up front back in, I want to say, 1950s or so. And we used to stay the night there all the time. Well, my grandma was kind of a collector. She was one of those grandmas that collected things from Goodwill and little buttons and, you know, just knicks and knacks and all sorts of stuff. And she always had these dolls that she collected from there. And my stepmom at the time of 20 years, she had basically raised me, and she used to tell us stories about when she was a kid. Like, she hated sleeping in her room, and weird stuff would always happen, and hearing things down the hall. And every time you go to my grandma's house, when you walked in the house and you looked to the left, you went through this like kind of entryway through the dining room into the living room. And she always had this like huge corner of just like probably a good $50 to $100 that she had just, it was kind of creepy, but she just kind of sat there. She literally just sat there in her living room, even when I was a kid. And you just kind of got this odd feeling, you know. It was just, you have all these eyes staring at you. And when we stayed the night over there, you slept in the living room.
Sure.
So one night we were over there, and we were always told not to go in the basement. The basement was in the living room. It was kind of a weird setup, but at the other end of the living room, it's kind of hard to explain, but you kind of go to the back of the living room, and then there's a hallway that goes to the back of the house with the rooms and a bathroom. Well, before you hit that hallway, if you turn around like you're facing the front of the living room, there's a staircase that goes down to the basement. The door's at the bottom, so there's just a staircase, and it's really dark. There's no light. And there's only one light down there, and it's a cement basement. It's all cement. And nobody ever go down there. Apparently, my uncles slept down there. That was their rooms, but it was the same thing. Like, they hated living down there. Like, they refused to stay down there once they got older. And anyway, backtracking to when I stayed the night, we babysitted these two kids, Hunter and Halsey, from when I was about 4 to 15. So our whole lives, they were like our siblings, and we were all over there. I remember it was a summer night. I was probably, I want to say 10 or 12 maybe. And Hunter was, 7 or 8. And, we had all heard some of the stories about these dolls and moving and making noise at night, and my grandma's pendulum clock going off at random times and stopping at random times, even though, you know, there was nothing to unplug or nothing. You know, it's just odd things happening at weird times in the night. And so that night we went to sleep, and I remember vaguely waking up in the middle of the night and hearing Hunter I don't know if he was crying or, you know, something was wrong. And I remember waking up, like, whispering, like, hey, are you okay? And I thought he was just having a bad dream because he never responded to me. And so the next morning we woke up, you know, not a lot happened that night, for me at least. And then he was just off the whole morning. He was just super quiet. And I remember that, and he just didn't want to talk to any of us. And I remember we finally left my grandma's house to go play in the yard, and I had asked him, like, hey, are you okay? Or, you know, like, you know, I told him kind of what happened last night. I said, do you remember that? And he just shook his head, yeah. I said, well, what was wrong? And he kept talking about this boy. And I was like, what boy? And then my brother, my actual brother at that time was Hunter's age. He was about 7 or 8, and he was over there too, but we were all passed out in the living room. So I was like, are you talking about Austin? Like, you know, that was the only other boy besides us three. And he goes, no, you know, that's not him, and that's not who it was. He goes, this boy, he looked like me, but he was, you know, he was dead. I go, what do you mean he was dead? And he goes, well, I saw him in the mirror. He goes, but it wasn't me because I couldn't see myself in the mirror. I just saw, like, over there in the kitchen, but I could see a boy standing there, and he was looking at me. And I said, well, what do you mean? And then, you know, I was like 10, I didn't understand really, you know, like I obviously been over to my grandma's house and had spooky vibes all the time, but I was a kid.
Sure.
So I didn't think anything of it. Well, later that week, we went back over to my grandma's house, for lunch. And, you know, we went over there all the time. It was, you know, open door kind of thing. We just kind of ran in, you know, it was just how it was. And I remember we had lunch, and we were just about to walk out to go play. And I remember, this is like the most vivid part of the memory, is I remember Hunter just screaming at the top of his lungs. And I mean, screaming, like, just like he had just gotten like stabbed or, you know, something really bad. And I'd never heard that from him before, you know, in 5 years at that point that I had known him. And I, you know, immediately, I was like one of the only people close to him, and I ran up to him like, what's going on? What's going on? Are you hurt? You know, and he just said, he's there, he's there. And I look over, and I'm looking in the mirror, and I didn't see anything, you know, and I could just see the fear in his face. Mm-hmm. And I remember the goosebump, like as a kid, you know, even getting that thought of, well, if he's this scared, you know, and Hunter wasn't the kind to just get scared for no reason. He was a pretty fearless kid. Like, he, you know, he didn't really have a lot of fears or get scared of the dark or anything like that. And I wasn't either, you know. And so my stepdad passed away when I was 7, so in front of me. So, you know, fear to me wasn't a huge thing, you know. So I just didn't understand, you know, what was happening. And my grandma later, when I was years later old, she had told me that she didn't like to talk about it much, but, you know, she told me that a lot of weird things had happened in that house. And she had never spoken of a boy, but she said that, you know, Hunter wasn't the first person to see a little kid in that house. And, you know, it would have been nice to know. Obviously we probably wouldn't have understood at that age. But I remember for years after that, Hunter would not go in my grandma's house. He refused. Anytime we went over there, he just stayed at the house. He would never, ever go in there because he was so scared. And I truly believe that day, whatever he saw in the night before, he really saw, you know. And I mean, to this day, I mean, he was pretty young. I don't know if he remembers it now, but I would imagine, as traumatizing as it was, if I were to ask him about it, I don't talk to him really anymore, but I would imagine that he probably would have, you know. But I remember that was really my distinctive first memory of paranormal, you could say.
Sure.
You know, it didn't directly happen to me, but it affected me big time.
It was close enough where you realized wait a second. This is not all just make-believe. This is not all just stuff that kids make up, especially with the way that he acted after the fact. If a kid's going to make something up, half the time they'll forget it by next week, and then no big deal to go back in the house. But it was obviously it was a traumatizing situation where he never wanted to set foot in that house ever again.
Yeah, and you know what's creepy about the whole thing is, you know, this is years later now. My grandma, she's a sweet lady, and she's probably in her late 80s now, but she's doing still really good. But I want to say, 20 years ago now? Oh, no, not 20, because I'm, 29? Maybe 10 years ago? Yeah, I was about 15, 14. We moved her out of the house because my grandpa had passed away. And we started getting rid of, she was kind of a pack rat, obviously. So she was really attached to all these things that she had collected, even though they were basically junk, you know, it was just a bunch of junk laying around the house.
Sure.
And, you know, we had told her, and at that point, and this is going to go into some of the other stories that I went through, but after going through some of those experiences later that I had, I learned a lot, obviously, about the paranormal and things that attach themselves to things. And I had talked to her, and she's very religious. She's Mormon. And so I tried to tread light water on that subject, you know, with her. But, you know, I just told her, I said, you know, a lot of these things you have, Grandma, are very old, and you don't know where they came from. You don't know what's happened around them or to them or things that were attached to them physical wise. Mm-hmm. And I said, I told her, I said, we're talking like hundreds to couple hundreds of items here, Grandma. Like, you know, that's not good, you know, and a lot of things have happened in this house that are just off. And I think you need to kind of cleanse the energy around you here because, you know, when my grandpa passed, like so many bad things happened in a sequence of events, and it was just kind of crazy in like a 10-year span from about that time when I was a kid to 10 years after that, how quickly things declined, everything around that house. And I don't know what she brought in the house, and maybe it was something she brought in around that time, because I mean, she literally would go like once a month shopping every month, you know, and bring all these little goodies home. And it's like, that's great and that's cool, but you don't know where they came from. And I'm a fond believer that you really have to be careful when you go to secondhand stores or you just choose to pick something up. You know, like I live in Gladstone, Oregon here, Portland, Oregon, basically. And, you know, it's like a Goodwill or something. You know, you find something cool and you're like, oh, this is awesome. I'm going to bring it home.
Especially if there's a bird on it.
Yeah.
Huh? Especially if there's a bird on it, then it's something. Even.
Yeah,
there's about 1% of our audience that got that joke, but,
it's crazy, but it's true, you know. And I have a thing, like if I ever go to a secondhand store, you know, besides even clothing, you know, as soon as I get home, obviously I wash it right away, you know. Yeah. It's like the first thing I do, you know. The second is I usually try to cleanse it, you know, in my own way that I do, and whatever it is, because you don't know where it came from. You don't know what kind of energy was attached to it, and maybe it was good, and that's great. You know, but even if it's good, it still means that something could definitely be following you, and I've learned that the hard way myself.
It seems that your grandma did have an understanding that, or at least just somewhat of an acceptance, that other people had seen things in this house, that there were other things there other than just the living. It wasn't just brushed off as being kids' imagination. So did she have, or at that time, seem to have any understanding or I guess cautionary understanding of what she was doing with bringing those items in?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I think she was just a sweet old lady that didn't, she was kind of closed-minded.
Okay.
Being as religious as she was or is, I should say. And she chose to ignore it. I think, you know, the stories and the facts and the things that were happening, mm-hmm. you know, and just avoid it, you know, so that it didn't come into her mind.
Sure.
And so therefore it didn't bother her.
Okay.
You know, whereas the people around her, like her daughter, Angie, and me and Hunter and other people, you know, my sister and her kids, you know, and those things, you know, I think that you know, like I recently went and visited her in Estacada, about an hour outside of Portland, and she's in this little cute, you know, home now on her own. And she took a lot of those things with her, but it was funny because when I walked into her house about a year ago or so, it was just, it was weird. You know, it was like walking back into the house.
Sure.
You know, it just had that feel, you know, of not bad. It wasn't a bad feeling, but it was definitely a weird vibe, you know, because you just, it was just all these things in there that weren't really hers and just collections of things, random things and dolls and weird things, you know, that just don't, you wouldn't see in a normal house, just everywhere. So, you know, and I wouldn't call myself, I don't know if I would, I don't even know if the right word is sensitive, but you know, I've definitely had enough experiences, I think, to know when I don't feel right or something's off, you know, whether it's instant anxiety around for nothing, you know,
or, sure.
A bad vibe or whatever. You know, I think everybody has that kind of sense when your aura gets thrown off.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so that was my first experience. So,
sure. Let's move over to when you were a child. This, it sounds like it, yeah. If I'm working chronologically, would have happened shortly after this. You had a stepfather who passed, and it sounds like there was an interesting interaction there that occurred from beyond the grave. Can you go into that story?
Yeah, so I'll fast forward through my list here. That happened, let's see here. When did that happen? I want to say that happened in 2012 or 13. I just got out of the military. And, you know, I had at the time just a generic spirit board, and I didn't really know a whole lot about it. I was just kind of stupid with it. And, you know, you just kind of get on it, get off it. You know, you didn't really think about those kind of things. And I was young. You know, I was, what, you know, 19, 18?
Sure.
So my best friend, Steve, at the time, we hung out in his garage is where he lived. And we hung out in there. And we were pretty good kids. We didn't get in a whole lot of trouble. But, you know, we just did our thing. And we're just silly and hung out there in the summer times. And that summer, I think of 2012-13, I'd introduced him to the board, and, you know, he had already had kind of his own experiences. And so I thought he was a good person to connect with on something like that. Cause I don't think people realize that with, I call them spirit boards, but with spirit boards, it can go good. It can go bad, but either way, you're going to get one or you're going to get both, not just one or the other. Yep. You know, you can't get one without the other. You know, it's positive and a negative, and you just have to know how to flow through both of those. And, you know, Steve, we were kind of brothers in a way, you know, we still are. We're older now when we have our own lives, but back then we were really close. And I feel like that connection and that bond we had really helped us from our stupidity of not knowing what we were really doing, get through some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And, we started talking to, I want to call him a gentleman because he called himself Greg. Well, we talked to Greg for a few weeks. He just kind of one night appeared on our board, and I don't know if you've ever, Tony, have you ever used a board, Tony?
I have not. I mean, I've seen them many times. I remember seeing them as a kid, but I never actually used one.
Well, when you do use one, if you ever do.
I won't.
Okay.
We'll just say that now, but continue on.
They're not to tamper with. Sure. But when you do, there's a flow to the board, and every presence that comes through will have a different flow. And it sounds hard. It's really hard to explain, but when you're touching it, you feel it. It's every presence kind of has their own just fluid movement. And some are fast and quick. Some are smooth. Some are curvy. Some are kind of sketchy. And it's amazing how when you switch from one to the other presence, how quickly it changes. And it's something that's completely out of your control. Mm-hmm. You don't even notice it till, you know, obviously after it's happening. And I didn't even pick it up until I started paying attention, like, you know, years later. But it's true. And it's a little creepy.
Sure.
But when Greg came through, we had talked to others. I don't know. I guess you could say things. I don't know if they were people or not. But Greg had this flow. And it was something that it was so powerful. It was so strong and smooth. Something that we had never had before. And, you know, he said, I'm from, you know, the Civil War. You know, you can basically, it's hard to explain, and this is going back years, I'm trying to remember, but he basically summed up through the board saying, you know, you can look me up.
Mm-hmm. So prior to you having this interaction then and bringing your stepfather into it, you had had some experience with the board. You had had some interactions.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yes.
Okay. So, before we, let's even backtrack just a little bit on this, because,
sure.
You know, obviously getting into using the board, there's, you said good, bad. Please do expound upon those experiences a little bit to give us some of a setting as far as where you were at a mindset, as far as your understanding of the paranormal, you know, as you got into your
sure.
teenage years after all those childhood experiences that you talked about initially.
Yeah. This started when I was about, I want to say, 16, 17, in about 2007, 2008. My mom's best friend, Lisa, was her next-door neighbor, and I lived with my dad at the time, so I only went and saw my mom on the weekends. Well, Lisa, she's into, you know, earthly, spiritual aspects of life, and she has been her whole life, and so she's practiced it for a very long time. And she's, you know, in her 50s now. So, you know, she has obviously quite a bit of experience. And I've always been fascinated by that. You know, I was forced into religion as a kid. And it didn't go very well for me. You know, I'm a pretty free-spirited guy.
Sure.
You know, I just knew that she was into it. And I didn't know how to really ask about it. Because it was something, the paranormal, something in ghosts and all that. You know, it was something I've always been interested in. But at the time, as a kid, you know, you don't really know how to ask that, especially coming from a religious family. So one day we ended up having like a 3-hour conversation just on our front porch. We're having a barbecue. And I remember we just sat there and talked. And she just got me to open up. And she just tried to explain certain aspects of it to me. And she tried to, you know, tell me about her philosophies on how, you know, those things come to be. And it was interesting to hear a different kind of perspective than I've heard my whole life, and some of the experiences she had gone through and showed me, you know. I had told her, now shortly before that, I had gotten the board and I had never used it yet because I was frankly scared. My parents didn't know I had it. You know, it was one of those closet things that you just kind of keep away till the right moment. And I was like, you know, maybe she's the person that I'm supposed to bring this up to. And Lisa, before I had told her any of that, that I had it, she had told me about one of the biggest things that happens to her is she calls herself an empath. You know, she has had situations where spirits have kind of presented themselves to her in her home or somewhere else and wanted her help or wanted her to go away or whatever, you know, and she either helps them or hurts them or, you know, whatever she needs to do to help them move on or get rid of them or whatever. And it just so happened that she had just had something happen when she was out one night, and she had told me the story. It's a really long story, so I don't want to get too much into that. But basically, what summed up is that opened me up to talking about the board. Mm-hmm. And she was really kind of nervous to do that because she's also a believer that, you know, it's not many good things come from them. And but she also liked the kid I was, you know, and my curiosity. But at the same time, I was I'm a pretty smart guy, you know, and I don't just go do things to do things usually. So, well, about two nights later, It was like early morning. She came to our door and she said, "I need to talk to you." And I said, "Well, what's going on?" And she goes, "Do you have the board?" And I said, "Well, yeah." She said, "Well, I don't usually ask this, but we need to use it." And I'm like, "Well, whoa, back it up."
Yeah.
You know, like, "What? I've never used it. So what's going on?" You know, she's like, "You don't understand, like, there's something wrong." And I said, "What do you mean there's something wrong?" She goes, "Well, I woke up last night and I kept hearing this little girl crying in my kitchen." And she goes, "In from my bedroom." And I go, "Well, are you sure it wasn't like a dream or was your TV on?" She goes, No. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "No, this stuff happens all the time." She goes, "But this one's bad. There's something really, really bad in my home." And she's like almost in tears. And I'm kind of scared now because I'm like, you know, 16, you know, like I'm like, okay, what do I do? And, you know, she said, "There's something following her." I, "Well, how do you know that?" And she goes, "There just is. Like, I just know there is." And I said, "Okay." So, you know, just kind of unknowingly what I was doing. And I had her knowledge of her experience in the past, you know, besides the board. So I trusted her and we got on it. Now, mind you, fast forwarding it to today real quick, Lisa is like my sister now. So we're very close. We talk weekly. So backtracking to back to the story, just give insight on how strong that bond is now. But she came over that evening and we set it up. And my mom was doing her thing in the room, knew we were doing it, so she didn't want any part of it. She didn't even want to be in the same room. And Lisa was already in tears on the board. She goes, "I know she's going to say something." And she goes, I can feel it. She's here. She's like, she wants to talk, like, right now. And I'm like, okay. And I kid you not, as soon as our hands got on that board, and Lisa's, like, trembling, like, she's barely touching it. Like, she's so, like, whatever this was totally affecting her. You know, we're talking like a middle-aged woman, like somebody who I had met just weeks ago, but at the same time, you know, never cried, never showed any emotion, anything like that. So it was kind of surprising to me to see her like this. And that board moved instantly. That what do you call it, planchette?
Mm-hmm.
I call mine the ring, but. The planchet just took off. I mean, it didn't shake or like, "Oh, it's maybe going to go to a letter." No, this thing bolted. I was barely touching it. And I looked at her and I'm looking at her hand and her band's barely touching it. And it scared me kind of how fast it was moving. And it just instantly said, "Help me." And before I could even ask who it was, literally before I even finished the sentence, it just spelled the name K-E-L-L-Y. And she said her name was Kelly. And Lisa just started bawling. I was kind of emotional. I could tell something was wrong, you know, in the room. I mean, you could just feel it. Something was wrong. And I said, "What's wrong?" You know, obviously. And she goes, "Being followed. I'm lost, basically." You know, it's some speak in sentences, some speak in words. It's hard to explain, but some are more fluid in their language than others when they talk. And Kelly was one of those that used words rather than sentences or multiple words. So you kind of got one or two words and that was it. And so we kind of had to go along with that. And so I tried to keep the question short so that she could answer on a shorter basis. And so after a few more questions, we basically had come to find out that she was, I guess, what you'd call in limbo, and that she was lost and she wanted to move on, but she couldn't because this thing was trying to, I don't know if you want to say take her down or wherever it was, but somewhere not good. And she didn't have much time. And so Lisa you know, told her, obviously, to hold on a little while longer. We asked how many days she had. She said 3. And we said, okay. And so it was pretty late that night, and we kind of ended it there. And that was the first night I ever had sleep paralysis, that night. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's something that's never gone away since. But whatever followed her definitely made itself known to me.
Yeah.
And it scared the hell out of me. That night, I had a dream. I still remember it clearly to this day. Lisa was in it, of course. But we were in this building. I don't know where. It was really dark. And I could hear a girl crying. And we were looking for something. We didn't have anything with us. So I just knew in my head we were looking for something. And I could hear this crying. And we come into this open room. And there's a girl sitting there facing away from us. And, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, it's Kelly. You know, here's Kelly.
Sure.
And this is in the dream. And I don't know. It just, it was weird. Lisa disappeared in the dream, and it was just me. And the closer I got to this girl, the more scared I became. And as soon as I tapped her on the shoulder to ask if she was okay, she turned around. She had these black eyes, and her teeth were different, and I instantly got a fear as if something was like pointing a gun at your head. Mm-hmm. And she grabbed my arm and she said, "You'll never have her." And she bit my arm, and I instantly woke up. And I remember right before I woke up, I do remember I said, "You can't have her." And there was like this confidence that overcame me in my dream. I don't know what it was, but it just made me say that. And then I woke up, and Tony, I kid you not, when I woke up, I could feel the bite mark in my arm. I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. I literally remember waking up and feeling the bite mark in my arm. I mean, I literally remember feeling my arm instantly from the pain, thinking there was going to be a bruise or a mark or something there. I mean, it hurt, and it wasn't very big. And I looked at my arm, and there was nothing there. And it scared me really bad because I'd never had a dream in my life ever. I mean, I've had, you know, we've all had nightmares and weird dreams, but not like that.
Sure.
Not something that physically affected me. And when I came out of that dream, it wasn't like a sudden wake up. It was, I woke up and I remember looking at my door, but I couldn't move. And I remember trying to move and I couldn't. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever had sleep paralysis, but when you have it, okay. When I looked at the door, you know, my eyes were closed, you know, and I knew that because when I finally came out of it, I opened my eyes and you saw the door. Okay. Just as it was like you saw the room and then you opened your eyes and you're seeing the same thing.
Sure.
It's the trippiest experience you've ever had.
Yeah.
It's super creepy. It's kind of like an astral projection,
yeah,
in my opinion, because I've had enough of them. You know, I've probably had 200 or 300 episodes in the last 10 years, mm-hmm, which is a lot.
Sure.
And I don't like it. I hate it. I've done a sleep study. I've tried to find things that I thought maybe were affecting my health or something that was causing, and nothing. You know, I'm in a clean bill of health.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm just not sure. So later that day, Lisa had gotten some herbs and some things together that, you know, she thought was going to help this situation. And in my head, I'm thinking, maybe this isn't a little girl.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this is something we shouldn't be messing with.
Sure.
And, you know, in her head, though, she kept you know, relaying to me, like, you know, there's a girl, trust me, you know, she's really being followed. Does she have to trust me? You know, and as young as I am, I'm like, okay, you know, all right.
Sure.
So I did. And she's not very religious, but in these kind of instances where she thinks maybe a demon or something more evil that, you know, didn't ever take human form, sometimes she carries around like the Lord's Prayer and a few things of religious right to help exercise whatever's happening. Because she does believe that there are certain aspects to life, religious-wise even, that come into play with certain entities. And so, so that night, the next night, second night, so this is day two now, we get on the board and it's go time. You know, this is it. You know, we're going to help this girl or whatever it is try to get over. And we kind of have a little short conversation with her, and she's basically telling us she's ready, but she's saying that, you know, we need to find this thing. So unfortunately, I mean, this is the stupidity of me not ever using the board, and Lisa not ever using the board, even though she had experience in many other things, you know, came into play. And we basically called it out. And I will tell you what, man, there can never be such a transition of a tune in the room. you know, it went from a pretty cool feeling room to a not very cool feeling room pretty quick. And that fluid I talked about changed. Mm-hmm. Whatever this thing was very, not slow. It was slower. Smooth, but slow. It took its time in saying what it needed to say. Mm-hmm. And then it got angry. And when it got angry, it sped up. And it kept telling us things like, hey, I'm going to hurt you. You know, you're dead. You'll never have her. It literally said the exact same thing that it said in my dream. And I remember it saying, bite. And I told you about the dream, and it bit me. Mm-hmm. And that kind of confirmed to me, okay. And there was a part, when that happened, there was a part of me that almost just wanted to stop. Like, I was like, no, I'm done.
Sure.
You know, like, because Lisa didn't even know about the dream at that point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, and if I'm barely touching a board and it just says bite and I have no idea what it's going for, it screwed me up in my head. And that's what it's trying to do. You know, and people don't realize that when you're scared, it feeds off your fear and it's trying to find things to make it worse. You know, so either you're going to run or you're going to give in to what it wants. Mm-hmm. And we didn't either. And at that time, I had been playing football in high school and I had just gotten out and I had torn my rotator cuff in my right shoulder. And it had partially healed, but I needed surgery. And at the time, you know, it was still sore, you know, but I didn't have a lot of pain at that time. And when Lisa started saying the Lord's Prayer to kind of help get rid of this thing, the pain that went through my arm that night, I don't ever cry, but I was in tears. I was in a lot of pain. And I, looking back now, know that this thing, whatever it was definitely attacking me.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Tyler Young about the ghosts of sleep paralysis. In part two of our interview, what was the little girl that was haunting Tyler and his friend trying to relay a message? What happened when Tyler tried to communicate with a deceased stepfather? What message did Tyler's stepfather have for his family when he communicated from the other side? And what caused Tyler to be able to see and hear the area, rooms, and people around him when he was not even awake? All that and more in part two of our interview. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper, sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. You'll get access to part two of this interview and all of our interviews, and access to advanced episodes months before they are released to the public. patreon.com/thegravetalks to get access to this and so much more. It helps support our program to keep it on the air. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for listening.